If therefore the Son shall make you free, ye shall be free indeed. I thought of that verse as Brother Darvin was sharing that devotional with us. Been inspired to be here this morning. It's just a wonderful place to be. That singing there and the Sunday school history lesson, you know. I was impressed. I don't think a whole lot has changed. I think the basic issues that our forefathers faced are very much the same as what we're facing today. Maybe just in a little different cloak, but the base, the root is very much the same. And a lot of good lessons that we can learn from a study like that. I wish that I could get in on all of it. I'd like to speak to the fathers this morning, and a message that's connected to the children's lesson that we've been looking at all week. And the title for our message is Build Thee an Ark. And this is especially directed to the fathers. However, you as sisters, as ladies here this morning, can also learn from the principles that we want to share. Build Thee an Ark. Imagine boarding a train in New York City and traveling by rail all the way to Beijing, China. While that might seem like an optimist's dream, someday it could be a reality. Visionaries are proposing a railroad that would take passengers and cargo from the USA and Canada, Russia and Europe and China. A rail service with high-speed 250-mile-per-hour trains that would allow uninterrupted travel from Europe's Atlantic coast to California and New York. To make these connections possible, they're going to need to bore a tunnel under the Bering Strait to link the eastern and the western hemisphere. The Bering Strait Tunnel would need to be over 64 miles long. They're proposing two main tunnels with upper and lower levels to allow two-way rail service for both passenger and cargo trains. The inside diameter of these tunnels would be 49 feet. They would also provide space for oil pipelines and electrical and fiber optic cables. Construction would go on for about 24 hours a day. The entire project is estimated to take 12 to 15 years to complete and has a cost of $35 billion. If my calculations and data are correct, it would be 9,164 miles from New York City to China via the Bering Strait Tunnel. At 250 miles an hour, you could be in China in 36 to 48 hours railroad time. What a project. What a project. I don't think it's started yet. I'm not sure where it's at. But the engineering and the finances, the coordination would be astronomical. Well, how do you think Noah felt when God gave him the plans, the detailed plans to build that ark? You think he felt pretty small in light of the magnitude of his assignment? You think he let out a sigh and wondered how he ever is going to start this, let alone finish? You think he felt overwhelmed with a sense of inadequacy? He probably did. He probably did. I can't imagine being assigned to a project that would take 120 years to complete. Well, those were probably his human emotions. We don't know for sure how he felt, but we do know what he did. That much we know. And we can turn to Hebrews chapter 11. There is one verse dedicated to the memory of Noah. And this one verse tells us a whole lot. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 7. And this is our text verse this morning. We want to take our sermon from this verse. It simply says this, by faith, Noah.
Being warned of God of things not seen as yet, moved with fear, prepared an ark to the saving of his house, by the which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is by faith. You're going to have to excuse me this morning. I get a little emotional when I get into a subject like this. And I guess you as fathers can maybe understand why, but we don't know how Noah felt, probably the same way, but we do know what he did. And God gave him the resources. God gave him what he needed for the task that he called him to do. This ark-building project, as we've been looking at, was astronomical. A vessel that's 450 feet long, 75 feet wide, 45 feet tall. According to nautical engineering, the longest wooden vessel ever built was 360 feet, and it wasn't seaworthy. Apparently they have record of that. So the ark had a master designer. The ratio of the ark, length, width, height, according to shipbuilders, represents a very advanced knowledge in shipbuilding. It is the optimum design to be able to withstand rough seas. Researchers believe that it easily navigated 30-meter waves, 90-foot waves. So this was quite a building project. In spite of this huge building project, this huge responsibility, Noah was also a father. He had three sons. He didn't have 12 boys and 12 girls. God didn't give him that many children. That would be a blessing to have that many. But he only had three sons. And I think being a father in Noah's time and his culture was probably a lot like it is being a father today. Let's turn over to Genesis chapter 6. We'll read a little here about the environment, a little about the culture, what it was like in Noah's time when this project was taking place. Genesis chapter 6, starting to read at verse 5 and on down to verse 14, and then I'd like to finish with verse 22. And God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And it repented the Lord that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him at his heart. And the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast and creeping thing, and the fowls of the air, for it repenteth me that I have made him. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. These are the generations of Noah. Noah was a just man and perfect in his generations, and Noah walked with God. And Noah begat three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. The earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. And God looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted his way upon the earth. And God said unto Noah, the end of all flesh is come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them. And behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Make thee an ark of gopher wood. Room shalt thou make in the ark, and thou shalt pitch it within and without with pitch. And then the following verses give the detailed instructions about how God wanted him to build this ark. Verse 22, thus did Noah, according to all that God commanded him, so did he. There you have it, black and white. I don't think there was a lot of negotiating. I don't think there was a lot of arguing. I think Noah was the type of man that when God told him what to do, he set to work and did it. It was an evil, corrupt time. The pressure to sin was strong. Raising sons was not an easy task, let alone managing a building project the size and magnitude of the ark. How did Noah do it successfully? How did he convince his sons to go along with him into that ark? It wasn't the popular thing to do. It was quite an accomplishment to build that boat, but even greater is the fact that Noah and his wife and his sons and his daughter-in-laws followed Noah into that ark. Those daughter-in-laws must have faced extreme family pressure from their families. I can't imagine. I wonder who their families were. I wonder what families they came from, what their lineage was. I guess all of us probably carry some of that blood in our veins this morning.
But there was daughter-in-laws that were willing to leave their families and follow their husbands into this ark, into this work, into something that was very, very unpopular at the time. What was Noah's secret? Verse 9, here in Genesis, Noah walked with God. He talked with God, and that impacted his life. Noah cared about his family because he cared about what pleased God. And if God knew that Noah was a blameless and just kind of a man, then you can be sure that his wife and family knew that as well. Hebrews 11, verse 7, we read that Noah prepared an ark. He prepared an ark to the saving of his house. The name of our message this morning is to discover how he did that and how we as fathers can do that in 2025. Will your family survive the flood of filth and sin that is drowning the world today? Or are they going to be swept away? There are 6 points we want to look at that are going to help us prepare an ark of safety for our families. I'm going to write them on the board so that you can remember them. And they all start with ark, all right? To prepare an ark, number one, we must be an architect. Noah prepared an ark, and that means to thoroughly prepare. So number one is, as fathers this morning, we must be an architect. An architect is a building designer or an engineer. We just did a project recently where the building department said we need to have an architect, someone who has the credentials to stand behind their design. That's basically what an architect is, someone who's gone to school, who understands construction, who understands load points and safety issues and all of that, and is able to provide a design and has their credentials, the authority to sign off and stand behind that design. It's important that an architect understands the function of the building he's designing. It's also important that he pays attention to the stress points and adequately specs the needed reinforcements. You know, it wouldn't be a good idea to have trusses on a building like this that have a snow load rating for someplace in Florida. I mean, it has to be spec'd for Pennsylvania. Now, I know that you don't maybe get that much snow here, but I know that you get snow. Because the year that I was at Shepherd's Fold, we went around and shoveled off roofs because of the heavy, wet snow that fell on this part of the country. Noah knew the architect, and in his own wisdom, he could not have designed that ark to carry the weight and the volume that it needed to carry under those heavy, tempestuous seas. Some historians believe that there were huge anchor stones which were attached to the rear of the ark. Apparently, that is consistent with other shipbuilding information that they have from that era. And they found a number of smooth, tall, 6-foot-high anchor stones up in the Mount Ararat region. That's what I'm told. And these stones have a hole in the top. They're an oblong, 6-foot-high oblong stone. And they're up in the mountains. Now, why would there be anchor stones up in the mountains? Well, historians believe that they were possibly attached to the ark. God was the architect. He designed the ark to provide safety and security for all that were inside. And fathers, this morning, you must be the architect for your home. God's design is flawless. It says in Psalm 127, verse 1, except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Our work will be in vain if we don't follow and don't know the architect's plan. He's given us the details, and if we follow his plan, our homes can be an ark of safety for our families. God has given us the headship order, and when it's followed, there is order, but when the Mrs. becomes the Mr., or the Mr. becomes the Mrs., and then there's havoc. And suddenly the flood is no longer outside the ark, but it's inside. God has given us direction about the relationship that's to be between the first and second mate. He's given us some instructions about that. Let's turn over to Ephesians 5. Ephesians 5, I'd like to read verses 28 to 33. It says here, so ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it, even as the Lord the church. For we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall be joined unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. Nevertheless, let every one of you in particular so love his wife, even as himself, and the wife see that she reverence her husband. There's a few words here that I would just like to point out. We're talking here about the relationship between the first and second mate. There's a couple words here. The first one is nourisheth in verse 29, and the literal meaning of that word is to fatten and to pamper and to baby, to treat lavishly, to mollycoddle, and to fuss over. I'm not sure my wife always feels that way, but that's what that word means. And then we have the word cherish, and that word means to brood, like a hen, providing safety under your wing. Is your home an ark for your wife? Or does she need to look elsewhere to have her needs met? You know, if you don't feel this morning like she's reverencing you, the word reverence, by the way, wife see that she reverence her husband. The word reverence means to be in awe of, to be in awe of. And a man, he needs a woman in his life that is in awe of him. you know, is he still as awesome as what he was when you first married him? Or is he kind of bothersome? Well, this morning, the best gift that we as parents can give our children is to love each other. That's the best gift we can give them. Noah walked with God. He was in step. He was in tune with God. Like I said before, they walked, they talked together. God and Noah were good friends, and because of that, the character of God influenced his life. Noah was a just man, it says back there in Genesis. That means that he was morally clean and pure. Noah was a perfect man, it says, and that means that he was a man of integrity. He was a man without blemish. Do you still remember in our children's meeting, do you still remember the first evening we used the name, Noah's name as an acrostic? Do you still remember what those words were that described the character of Noah? By the way, children, I was going to tell you that we're not having a children's meeting this morning. We're going to save that for tonight, okay? You had Sunday school this morning, so we'll get you back up here again tonight for the last lesson. But you remember the acrostic, the words that described the character of Noah. What was the one that went with N? Anybody remember? He was noble, that's right. And what went with O?
Obedient.
What went with A? Authentic, yes. And what went with H? He was holy. That describes Noah's character. That describes what kind of man he was. If we're going to build an ark of safety for our family fathers this morning, we're going to need to have the same character that Noah had. We're going to need to follow the architect. And if we follow his plan, then our ark won't sink. All right, number two, to prepare an ark of safety for our families, we'll need to be an archer. I take it there's some archers here this morning. I don't know if any of them have been successful, but you've only had about a day or so to test your skills, I suppose. But an archer is someone who uses a bow and arrow, and it can be used both defensively and offensively. Joseph Manasseh holds the world record as a long-range bow shooter. He can hit a 5/8 inch flagpole from 787 feet. pretty good aim. He knows how to aim a little off course depending on the wind speed, and he's able to hit that mark 787 feet, 5/8. Pretty good aim. It's a challenge for you boys. I don't know if Noah was an archer or not, but he certainly had a target. He certainly had a goal. And he was going to do all that he could to save his house. The cost was high. The project was daunting. The opposition was strong. The environment was corrupt. Noah didn't flinch. His aim was true. He was building an ark to save his family. And in spite of the mockery, in spite of the peer pressure, not one was lost. I find that amazing. How did Noah do it? Well, I believe it's because they saw their dad was authentic. They saw he was real. They saw that his character was spotless. They saw how different their dad was in comparison to the other contractors that worked on the ark. They knew their dad walked with God. I'm sure they did. You know, I'm sure if they couldn't find dad, they knew that he was probably out on a walk with God. They knew God was his personal friend. They heard their father preach to the curious tourists. They saw the fairness and integrity in their father. And while Noah built his sons, while he built the ark, he shaped their character. He pointed them to God as he pointed those stakes and pegs. Noah pitched that ark inside and out. Not only did it preserve it for the 120 years while he was building it, I mean, you'd hate to put that much effort into something and have it rot by the time you need it, but it also kept that flood water out. Fathers, this morning, it's our duty to protect and preserve our families from the influences that are going to flood out their faith. And there's a lot of them today. Guard their relationships. Pitch those cracks. Be careful who they go to the swimming hole with or who they attend sleepovers with. Guard and guide their interests and dreams. Most of all, guard their hearts. Make sure the enemy isn't coming in through cracks and stealing them away. You know, there's so many things that can steal our children's hearts. It can be their peers. It can be their talents. It can be their dreams. And it can also be our lack of interest and involvement. Your children need your time. They need your ears. Be an archer. Use your bow to protect your family. Use your bow to show them God's way. Psalm 127, verse 4, his arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. You can use your bow. You can use your influence to point your children either towards God or away from them, from him. Noah's concerned about the safety of his family. Hebrews 11, verse 7 confirms this. And I believe it was probably the second biggest motivating factor in him following through with God's plan, with God's assignment. All right, to prepare an ark for the safety of our families, we as fathers must be archaeologists. Archaeologists. Now you wonder how does this connect? And maybe it's a weak connection, but we're going to try. Oh, no, I'm stuck. Archaeologist. Is it I or is it O? Hey, teachers, students, how do you spell archaeologist? A-R-C-H-E-O-L. O. Next. G-I-S-T. All right, there we have it. Well, that'll be right. Thank you. Maybe it doesn't connect that well, but we'd like to try. Archaeology is a study of ancient cultures and remains. If you ever come to Alberta, we'll take you to Dinosaur National Park. I believe it's a UNESCO site. I believe it's one of the seven wonders of the world. It's pretty important anyway. But if you come to Dinosaur Park, you travel back through the Badlands, they got little huts back there where they've excavated dinosaur bones. There's about two or three of them there. And they put a little roof over top and some protective glass there to protect these remains. And I've come to the place in my faith where I believe there was dinosaurs through various points of evidence. But anyway, an archaeologist is a person that goes out and actually digs and excavates and to find those remains. And archaeologists are trying to find Noah's Ark. Various claims have been made as to its location. Ron Wyatt, who is an archaeologist, claims they have discovered the Ark in the Ararat Mountain region. Apparently there's a boat-like formation up there in the mountains that fit the dimensions of the Ark. It's basically carbonized, but testing has been done by drilling into this mound, and they've discovered animal remains such as cat hair and antlers and iron rivets, and they found this all in this mound. And they claim that the outline of the hull is still, I've seen pictures of it, and I can see why they think that that's the Ark. And there's some who support this find, and there's others who are dubious as to its authenticity. Anyway, an archaeologist would need to be a very patient person to make a living by sitting out there in the sun day after day with a sun hat and a little toothbrush and carefully scraping away years of carbon to try and find some artifact. It would take a lot of patience. I don't know if I'd have the patience for that. But I do know that being a father takes a lot of patience, doesn't it? I find it that way. Well, Noah had a lot of patience. He didn't stop. He didn't abandon the project. But he kept at it patiently, persistently, putting up those timbers, applying that pitch, and all that went along with that project. It was hard, tedious work. Scoffers laughed. The curious stared. The tire kickers asked questions. Noah preached while he worked. The Bible tells us that in 2 Peter chapter 5, it says Noah was a preacher of righteousness. He was a preacher of righteousness. By faith, Noah moved with fear. And fathers, we need that kind of faith. We need that kind of patience today that Noah had. We need the respect and reverence for God that he had. If we're going to build an ark of safety, we're going to need the persistence and the patience that he had. You might feel like an archaeologist some days. Fathers, we must always keep the bigger picture in view. Sometimes progress seems slow in our own lives. In our own lives, it seems slow. Sometimes we wish we were stronger or smarter or more successful. Instead, we seem stuck or even submerged, overwhelmed in the responsibilities of life. The 15th of the month comes around too soon. It seems we just got done paying the credit card bill, and here's the 15th of the month again. And we got to start all over. 5:30 is here before we're done sleeping. We have a meeting Monday night, topic on Wednesday night, and the boys want to go fishing on Friday night, and we feel pulled apart by the hair and by the toes and by the arms and by the nose, and I guess it's good to feel needed, isn't it? We need patience. We need faith. You know, God is in control. He has a plan. And you just simply, faithfully keep building that ark. One board at a time. One nail at a time. Yes, and sometimes there's nails you got to pull out. Sometimes there's things you got to redo. Sometimes there's things you got to do over. That's all part of the project. You know, we live in an age where it seems it's the faster the better. You know, we're looking to break records. Tractors now go the speed of cars, and dial-up. You still remember dial-up? We used to live with dial-up. Well, it's way too slow now. 0 to 60 needs to be faster. Well, faster isn't better when it comes to building families, when it comes to building our ark, is it? But it takes patience, one step at a time. All right, number four, to prepare an ark of safety, a father must be an archon. Another word we don't use very often in the English language. But it is a word. It is an English word. And an archon is actually a Greek magistrate or law officer. Authority is something that God has given to us as fathers. And he expects us to use it properly, to not abuse it. We must remember that it's not a right, but it's a responsibility. And we're going to give an account for how we use the authority that God has given to us. To not exercise our authority when God wants us to is an abuse of the God-given trust that he's given to us. Or to use our authority as a way to threaten or intimidate is also an abuse of our authority. Whether you're a father or a boss or whatever position of authority you hold, threatening and intimidating is an abuse of that authority. There's many fathers today who are simply passive couch potatoes. Rather than rising to the challenge of insisting on law and order, they just kind of leave their children to themselves, and they got to kind of find their way. It's hard work to insist on order and obedience. It's hard work to deal with disobedience. Training takes time. It takes sweat. It takes tears. Talking to and counseling our children takes a lot of wisdom and discernment. And fathers with teens, you all know that it takes more time now in their teenage years than what it did when they were small children. At least I found it that way. There's just so much more to discuss and talk about and work through as they transition from childhood to adolescence and on into adulthood. It takes a lot of time. Do you think Noah's boys would have come along in that ark? Hey, he just kind of left them to themselves, just kind of let them run with the crowd and find their way and kind of discover what's out there and maybe sow a few wild oats. And you think they would have come along in that ark? The chances are pretty high that they wouldn't have. I believe Noah's home had order. I think there was ground rules. I think the boys had to help with the housework. Maybe Ham had to help with the cooking, and maybe Shem had to hem the tunics. I don't know. I don't think Noah tolerated back talk or smart talk or dirty talk. I don't think he did. He provided kind, consistent authority, and his sons respected him. And they embraced his faith, his values, and the amazing thing is they found wives that did as well. Ephesians 1 has a very balanced perspective for us as fathers. It says, "And you fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and in the admonition of the Lord." That word, bring them up, is connected to the same Greek word, nourisheth, that we talked about back in Ephesians chapter 5, where it means to fuss over and to mollycoddle and to pamper. That is the meaning of that word, bring them up. Bring them up, not yell them up, not beat them up, not show them up, but bring them up. It has the idea of bringing them along with you in the direction that you're traveling, the direction that you're going. Then we have the word nurture, which means disciplinary correction. And this word has the idea of putting some bite to your bark. You know, if it's always just bark, they soon learn that once the bark gets to a certain decibel level, then it's maybe time to move. But until it gets there, we don't really have to go very far. That's not the kind of obedience. That's not the kind of motivation we're trying to instill in our children, is it? That's not how our Father in Heaven operates. And you know, what this is all about is finally, and we're going to get to this point, but it's finally bringing our children to the point where they choose to follow their Father in heaven. That's where we're going with this. That's what we want to happen. Our homes don't need authoritarians. They need leadership. Like we discussed last night in children's meeting, the first thing that Noah did when he got off that ark was to build an altar and to offer offerings. And the reason he did this is because worship was a priority in his life. And Father's worship must be a priority in our lives and in our homes as well. All right, to prepare an ark of safety, number five, a father must be an Arcadian. An Arcadian. Again, a word we don't use a lot, but Arcadia was a province in Greek that was an area known for its beauty and its seclusion. Its inhabitants became proverbial as herdsmen, leading simple, pastoral, unsophisticated, yet happy lives. Arcadia became an idiom for an imagined place of rural bliss. Maybe Lebanon County is an Arcadia. I'm not sure. But if you look up Arcadia in the dictionary, it'll define it as a place in which people are imagined or believed to enjoy a perfect life of rustic simplicity. It could be like the idealistic imagination that a city resident might have about moving to the country, you know, until the farmer next door wants to build a chicken house or a pig barn. But, you know, the idea of a rocking chair on the front porch, you know, with a picket fence and a daisy-lined driveway and a chicken scratching for grubs out in the front lawn and a cow munching grass in a nearby meadow. That kind of place. Well, so much for dreamland. Is your home, is your ark, a place that is peaceful and happy? Is it an Arcadia? Is it a place that your family enjoys better with or without you? You know, I wonder what it was like in that ark. I can hardly imagine that it was peaceful and pastoral, at least not the first few days when the fountains of the deep broke up. It was probably like a zoo in there, but I'm sure that it was a paradise compared to what was going on outside the ark. I'm sure it was. The terror, the screaming, the crying that was going on with those that were on the outside. Fathers, it's our duty to do what we can to create an atmosphere of peace and tranquility in our homes. You know, our families should be a place that our children love to be with. A place where they're appreciated and treasured. A place where daddy can get down on his hands and knees and play horse or ride a golly. You know, ride a golly, you know what that is. You know, and being a grandpa, it's wonderful because you get to do that too. You get to do it the second time. Should be a place where our children hear their daddy pray for them individually. And you know, it's something that shouldn't stop. You know, I often think about Job and what the Bible tells us about him and how he went out and sacrificed for his children on a daily basis. He brought them to the throne of God. And as fathers here this morning, if you're not doing that, and I trust you are, but if you're not, start. Every day, individually, take your children to the throne of God. The married children, the daughter-in-laws, the grandchildren. I don't think we understand the kind of difference that that makes. Home should be a place where our children feel useful, where they learn the satisfaction of hard work, where they hear a compliment when they do well. You know, the lawn doesn't always have to be mowed perfectly, and I still have to work with this. I like doing outdoor work, and I like if it's done right. I don't like mustaches. You know what I mean by mustaches in the front lawn? If there's a spot that's skipped or missed, I'll tell them about it, and they need to go back out and correct it. But the point is that our standard of perfection shouldn't be so high that they can never do it right. Make the atmosphere of your home one that is hard to leave and easy to come back to. I think this song says it well. There is beauty all around when there's love at home. There's joy in every sound when there's love at home. Peace and plenty here abide, smiling sweet on every side. Time doth softly, sweetly glide when there's love at home. In the cottage there is joy when there's love at home. Hate and envy ne'er annoy when there's love at home. Roses bloom beneath our feet, all the earth a garden sweet, making life a bliss complete when there's love at home. Kindly heaven smiles above when there's love at home. All the earth is filled with love when there's love at home. Sweeter sings the brooklet by, brighter beams the azure sky. Oh, there's one who smiles on high when there's love at home. That sounds to me like an Arcadia, doesn't it? This morning, if your home is not a place of bliss, then let Jesus make it that way. He's still in that business. All right, number 6. To build an ark of safety, a father must be an Arcturus. Anyone who enjoys studying the stars knows what Arcturus is. But Arcturus is the fourth brightest star in the night sky. He's the brightest star in the constellation Bootes, and Bootes in Hebrew means to come quickly. There's a constellation that means to come quickly. Arcturus has been referred to as the star of joy, the star of joy. And as fathers here this morning, the question for us is, are you an Arcturus? Are you an Arcturus? Does your life, does your character shine brightly in the dark world around you? Do your children see in you the one who said in Revelation that I come quickly? Do they see him shining from our lives? Are we pointing our children toward the star of joy? Arcturus was a point of reference to sailors for generations. Before the days of GPS, they could look up in the sky and they could find Arcturus. And if they could find Arcturus, they could find their way home. Noah was an Arcturus in his day. Steady, calm, faithful, obedient. He never wavered from his goal. He kept building that ark. Through the cheering, through the sneering, through the cold, through the heat. 120 years. You go back 120 years, it takes you back to 1905. That's when he would have started the project. Steady as a sailor in the night sky, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, they saw his consistent character, his faithfulness, day after day, year after year. Their father was a point of reference, an example that they could follow. I believe their father was their star. And if you're a father here this morning and you've got wayward children, I would just say this to you by way of encouragement. Be an Arcturus. Be an Arcturus. Stay set. Stay steady. Sometimes you see parents follow the children. And that's sad when that happens because those children have no more Arcturus in their life anymore. Proverbs 17, verse 6 says, "The glory of the children are their fathers." Oh, there's many children today in the world who don't have a father that they can be pleased with. Maybe there's someone here like that this morning. I encourage you, you have a heavenly Father. And there's some other faithful man, some other faithful father that you can follow. Do that. You know, there are many children whose daddy doesn't care about them. He's never home, or he's living with another woman that is not their mother. This morning, I'm thankful to have a faithful father. Not a perfect father. He's not perfect. I'm not either. But a faithful father, both earthly and heavenly. I'm thankful for you as fathers here this morning. May all of us point our children to the heavenly Father, to the perfect Father, so that our children can become his children. That must be our ultimate goal. That must be our deepest desire, that our children would enter the ark of safety and be saved from the flood of corruption today and from the fire of destruction tomorrow. May God help us. Let's kneel for prayer.